Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
John says, I told him to take her to the clinic and he wouldn't do it. Of course, that girl is Monica. That baby turns out to be Tate.
You're listening to the Dutton Rules Yellowstone podcast. Thank you all. If you are a longtime listener from our past seasons, welcome back. We're so glad that you're here. You can rate and review us on good old Apple Podcasts, and also rate us on Spotify is where you can find it. And if you want to see Billy and I just gabbing away, you can head on over to our YouTube channel where we have the video platform of this as well as weekly Yellowstone podcast. So go on to our YouTube channel. It's Taste of Country. Feel free to hit subscribe and the notifications button because when we drop a video, you'll be the first to know. So without further ado, as you see, we have Mr. Billy Dukes, co-host. Welcome, Billy.
Hello, Addison. How are you?
I am just dandy. I'm excited. This episode was quite, my jaw dropped a little bit. And we won't. I know we have trivia, but.
Yeah, well, we learned a lot. There wasn't any deaths for a second consecutive episode. So if you're measuring by like body count, this wasn't that great of an episode. But a lot of really, really important setup. Very little. Don't worry about it this week.
Amen. Before we get into that, what was our trivia question last week? And who won it? AKA, who is getting a beautiful affirmation from Mr. Billy Dukes?
Last week's trivia question had to do with the beginning of episode 5. And the question was about the cowboys who started off that episode. They were doing some real cowboy kind of things. The question, what was that move called? Where the horse sort of runs and then comes to a quick stop. What was it called? And if you wanted to give me any other information, that's fine as well. And I know this because I got my most recent issue of Horse Illustrated.
You did not.
No.
You did not. Did you really? Okay. No, I was like, no, Billy.
No. I grew up in Detroit. We do not have horse. I don't even think they send Horse Illustrated to Detroit, suburbs of Detroit. But the move is, it's a sliding stop. It's a signature mover. It's a signature maneuver in the sport of reining. So any one of those answers would have done. The sliding stop is specifically what the horse is doing. And the idea is kind of keep the front legs moving for a really long time while the back feet stop. If you can go 10, 15, 20 feet, you've got a horse that's really good at it.
Interesting. And the point of that is,
I don't know if I know the real like life application for such a thing.
Okay.
Like, you would think you want the horse to stop or go. Why would you need the horse to split the difference? Maybe it's just show
off. Slide. Yeah, this is not baseball. Yeah. We're not sliding into home plate. Why do horses need to do this? Yeah.
But Todd came in. He knew to email staff@tasteofcountry.com. So Todd from Ohio, congratulations. Uh-huh. He knew it was raining. And Todd, you are the front legs to my back legs in this endeavor, my friend. You keep this show going. You are a hero today, my friend. I hope you rein your way to victory in life today. And your whole family comes along with you, leaving behind the back legs of despair.
Billy, I don't know how I felt. I don't know how I liked you telling Todd you are the back legs to his front legs.
It was a metaphor.
Okay. Yeah. You know what blew my mind? Congratulations, Todd. Thank you so much for emailing staff@tasteofcountry.com. What blew my mind is when Travis, a.k.a. Taylor Sheridan, was rattling off the price tag behind these horses. Like, one of them was, what, multi-million dollars?
Yeah, $1 million, $2 million. The cheapest one they talked about was $300,000 to $400,000 to $500,000. I mean, that's a house, and that's like a nice.
We are buying a house.
House, like you can get a house in Nashville, which is like an inflated real estate market, like for $500,000 and live quite comfortably. Or you can get a horse. You choose.
Or you can get a horse. Yeah.
What's the better investment? I don't know. Maybe the horse is the better investment in this economy.
Well, let's dive into. Well, I can tell you right now, I'm not looking to buy a horse. I'm looking to buy a house. If I'm having to choose the two, I can't sleep on a horse. Mm-hmm. Let's go into. So, episode 6 is what we're recapping today.
We need this week's trivia question.
Oh my gosh! I'm so sorry. Okay, yeah, sorry. Back it up. I'm sure listeners are like, "Excuse me, what is this week's trivia question?"
Real simple one this week. John Dutton has an official government position. What is it? In season 1, what is it? What is his job for the government?
Good.
Yeah, it's
Stop
not.
That taste of.
It should be easy, but it's not totally clearly defined. You kind of have to look for it a little bit, but longtime listeners will know.
Honestly, I don't think I know. Casey's, I would know. Interesting. Well, staff at tasteofcountry.com is where you can send the answer. Also, you can send it in the comment section of this video on YouTube. Right, Billy?
Perfect.
To make sure before I send people there. But okay, episode 6, it was titled The Remembering. And do you want to give an overall recap? I know this is kind of how we do things. I've given an overall recap, then we kind of backstep a little bit of kind of our thoughts.
Yeah. So like I mentioned, this was an episode that didn't necessarily have a ton of action. It just a lot of sort of tense scenes, a little bit of drama. I guess it ended with some pretty serious action. But we start off with a pretty good Casey and Rip scene, where we learn that Casey and Rip have a long simmering feud, and Rip does not like Casey one bit. Casey kind of goes trotting off on his own, comes upon a bear. Rip helps him get away from the bear, and then they get into a fight. They quarrel because Rip sees Casey as someone who's just always bringing trouble to the family and can't stay out of trouble's way, and they get into a fist fight, and you know, they tag each other pretty good. I think at the end of the day, Rip probably gets the better of Casey. Take note of that, because that's going to play an important role in a couple of more episodes. But then they come together again later on and decide not to fight. But you kind of understand why Rip is so protective. He's protecting the Duttons and he thinks Casey is a threat. From there, we go to a scene that I think maybe we should park down on, because this was probably the heart of the episode. The most memorable scene, it was the first conversation John and Monica have. And throughout the series, they're going to have a series of really kind of important heart-to-hearts that kind of become their own separate relationship. It's cool how John and Casey's wife kind of form this relationship on their own. And John admits and clarifies to Monica why Casey hates his dad so much. And what we find out is the explanation for why he has the brand. Yeah.
And this is when my brain went...
Here as well, because of what he reveals, but it still didn't illustrate to me exactly why Casey got the brand. But the reason is that Casey, he was a disobeying kid. He never listened to his dad. And then he got, as John tells it, he got some girl he barely knew pregnant, and he was going to marry her. John says, I told him to take her to the clinic and not let you leave until you had an abortion, and he wouldn't do it. Of course, that girl is Monica. That baby turns out to be Tate. So you start all these sort of longing, guilt-ridden looks that John Dutton has had for these first 5 or 6 episodes start to make a little bit more sense.
100%. And I think, too, I like how they did it where, as John's telling Monica this, it's not like I did not know, oh, he's talking about Monica till the very end. At first, I was like, oh, my gosh, who did Casey get pregnant? And so there's another girl somewhere, you know what I mean? And then when she was like, so you're – I think she's the one who – outed herself, right? I think.
Oh, John.
I think
knew
she's the one who made it clear.
Oh, maybe.
No, I'm saying in that scene, like that's how I figured out, like, oh, Monica, like it was Monica. Anyways, it just like blew my mind. I had no clue because, like I said, you know, I've been watching this show starting at season 4. So I've been watching this blissfully unaware of anyone's kind of like the backstory to that degree. And so now knowing them and now kind of reversing and hearing that story, I was like, what?
So the sequence of events here still kind of troubled me. Like, I can't figure out why Casey sort of submitted in some sort of way, or at least came back home to get the brand. Like, he went through all of that where he disobeyed his father and wouldn't take his girlfriend, Monica, to the abortion clinic. At what point did he come back home and was he like, what's for supper today? And then John had the Cowboys round him up and branded him. That part was and will remain a little bit confusing. I think that's about all the storyline we get as far as Casey's brand.
Well, and I'm curious, too, if it was one of those, Casey was more, the rebellious child, whatever you want to label him. And he goes off, does his own thing, realizes, ooh, I need more stability. I need a little help here, raising a son. I just need something more stable. And so John's like, well, the only way that you can come back home is if you're going to be essentially loyal to us, you're going to be branded. You know what I mean?
I do. Absolutely. And this, like, the big plot line for this first few episodes has been about Casey's sort of relationship with his father and the ranch. And that's going to kind of continue. Are they going to move back to the ranch? Are they going to stay on the reservation? Like, we're starting to see them get pulled back in. And Tate certainly is all in because John keeps feeding him oversized donuts. And clearly, I mean, the house
doesn't
that he
take
has
much
is,
for Tate.
No, it doesn't. He sees the attraction. But Monica and Casey to this point don't seem to totally want to move back. But I think Monica maybe is sort of figuring it out a little bit. It's interesting.
What do you think was the kind of when Monica, pretty much asks, who branded him, and John says, I did. Mm-hmm. I feel like there was a significance in him saying that. I just don't necessarily know the why. Like, why was it significant that John did not have, like, Rip brand him or, someone else? You're a dad. What would be that significant? Not that you're trying to brand your children, but you know what I mean? Of like,
yeah, I think he wanted Casey to know who the man of the house is. Mm-hmm. I think it was a little bit of, two moose banging racks and whichever one runs away first. It was a little bit of that. It was a power play. He wasn't just going to have his ranch hands do it. He was going to do it himself and literally put his brand on it. And John seems to have some level of guilt to that, but that doesn't mean he's not going to be capable of similar actions moving forward, I don't think.
And this whole conversation got brought up because Walker is now on the ranch. He's a ranch hand. He gets branded. Monica somehow wanders in to the field, sees all this go down of Rip branding Walker. And so that's how, she then inquires with John, why do you guys brand? And then that's where, this whole development of story about Casey, Monica, John, that whole situation. Like, that's how this conversation got started.
You want to fast forward a little bit in the episode to kind of finish out Monica's plot line for the show? Because pretty significant developments with her, and she's taking Tate to school, and she gets out and there's a fight at the school. Why don't you describe what happened there? Because, that was a pretty chilling scene, I thought.
She, was trying to do what was best, come in as a disciplinarian, stop the fight. Well, she gets in the middle of it, essentially, and a swing gone wrong, essentially. It wasn't meant for her, but by default of her putting herself in that situation, she gets knocked out. And I mean, like, knocked out cold. She is on the ground, Tate screaming, mom, mom. And you're kind of left of, like, and she's bleeding, if I remember. Anyways, and yeah, if I remember correctly. But and then you flash forward, and they're in the hospital. Casey's there. Her grandfather, right, is also there?
Felix. Yep, Grandpa Felix.
Felix. Yeah, Felix is there. And I think what was chilling for me is the doctor said, once they got her stable, they said, because Casey was like, I want to see my wife. And they're like, we really don't suggest that, but we're also not going to stop you. And it was a scene, she's super swollen, all black and blue. And it was a scene that he was like, man, I wish I hadn't had seen it.
That was a pretty ugly little fight scene.
You know what? I also just realized I might have actually given, I think the episode ends with her on the ground. I don't think we're in the hospital quite yet.
Yeah, you got a little ahead of yourselves because you've watched ahead.
I know. I'm so sorry, guys.
So Casey does see her at like the school nurse and they wrap her up and then he takes her home. And then the episode ends. She's having she faints and the episode ends dramatically. Like put her in the back of the truck and they're rushing her to the hospital. And it's this whole is Monica going to make it? I mean, spoiler alert, she's been around for 5 seasons. So she pulls
through. Maybe I didn't spoil too much. Yeah.
I'm going to give you a little bit of a heads up here, and I don't know if you've gotten this far ahead, but the path that she's on right now is going to lead to an introduction of a new character played by the man who plays Sam in 1883. Remember, Sam is Elsa's husband in 1883. Yeah, he's part of
Bay.
Yellowstone. Yeah.
Okay. So I haven't gone that far, so...
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
We start to see, and I think this is maybe the origin points. Some people get really upset with Monica, and they think Monica is a Debbie Downer for Casey, and she's holding him back. And I've just never really understood why that is. Like, she does seem to get herself in a lot of sort of ridiculous or really unfortunate kind of moments or injuries. And they sort of stack up to the point where it's almost distracting from the plot line. But as a character, she's not really trying to hold Casey back. She's just like him, also trying to figure out what's best for her family. And the answer isn't super clear.
Yeah, I don't have an issue with Monica right now. I think where she got annoying more so in season 4 and beyond is just anytime something was going wrong, it happened. She was the source. I think that, you know, it's always like, oh, okay, here we go again. Okay, here we go again, you know. Like, this aspect of Monica doesn't bug me right now.
That's how it is for season 1, 2, and 3 as well. Like, she is kind of like right there at the origin or at the root of a lot of the problems. But it's not like she's making it or she's stirring up trouble necessarily. Mm-hmm. Although,
it just,
maybe she does.
She's kind of wrong place. I was like, wrong place, wrong time right now.
Right now. For now, she is. So kind of watch Monica and let me know if your feelings change on her. Because I don't know, she's an interesting character. The acting isn't always the best, but I've still always liked her as a character. Like, she brings some heart and humanity to sort of the ranch, which is needed.
The scene that dialogue-wise I thought was so good was when the governor was talking to Beth. And she said, you're emotionally stunned as if you're still a 14-year-old. Who hasn't dealt with trauma. This is not word for word, I was like, that was the most beautiful description. And she pretty much told her, like, to get over trauma, like, you've got to, she is essentially, like, how Beth is reacting is as if she's a 14-year-old. I don't know how old Beth is supposed to be now, because she never dealt with the trauma that she experienced when her mom died, all the above. And I was like, wow, that was a beautiful way to say that.
She's not wrong either. Let's back up a little bit and set that scene because there are some other important things that happened there. It's a scene early on in the episode. Beth and Jamie go to visit the governor, the district attorney, and it's just the four of them and the governor. It's just the four of them in the room at first. And they're talking about Jamie running as an independent for district attorney. Beth's role is sort of undefined. I don't know what political role she has in mind or what political role John Dutton has in mind for her. She's at the meeting as well, and she's acting up. Like, she's just shooting her mouth off, and they introduce Jamie's new chief of staff, who we'll get to in a minute. And Beth, her quote is, can my whore be a 6-foot fireman who loves Jesus? Like, just totally undercuts this woman.
I just cannot with her. I just cannot.
Yeah, that's a great Bethism right there. So Beth and the governor have a one-on-one. The governor clears the room and has this one-on-one with Beth where she basically says, "You can't bully me, Beth. You're acting like a 14-year-old child and you can't bully me." And then Beth, she fires back in some pretty effective ways, saying basically, "If you sleep in my mother's bed again, I'll end your career." And they kind of leave it at that, where maybe there's a healthy fear and respect sort of the other. Would you call it that, maybe?
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like Beth tries to inflict a healthy amount of fear, into anyone she comes in contact with. But I feel like it's one of those of, it's just maybe a little bit of mutual respect that they are both semi-terrifying women.
Immediately after that, the governor and the district attorney start talking about not backing John for the next election, and they're referring to John's role within the government. She's thinking about maybe backing somebody else because he's behaving badly. And when you do kind of stack his decisions and behaviors, they are kind of questionable. I mean, not revealing the cancer diagnosis, recommending Beth to be part of the political game. He's kind of doing some things that are just not good for the state. But he's never really worked for the good of the state. He's always worked for the good of the Duttons. It's just now he's kind of getting seen.
This episode is one that we also realize the kind of severity of his colon cancer. Or sorry, the tumor that he had in his colon.
Right? He mentions how long it was, right?
Yeah. Well, and his kids had no clue. Like, this is the scene that he pulls back up. Somehow, I'm not remembering correctly of how the kids found out. I think someone called Jamie, right?
The governor told Jamie that meeting.
Yeah.
The governor and Jamie are just talking, and she mentions the cancer, and Jamie tries to deny it. But she convinces him, so he shoots out of there and finds Beth, and they go to confront John.
Why do you think that he didn't tell them?
I think that's kind of an old man kind of thing to do. Like, I think you don't, you know, the guy who doesn't want to go to the doctor certainly doesn't want his kids making a big deal about his colon cancer. He just sort of wants to take care of it and live life. I can 100%. Actually, I can relate to that on this very day more than ever. Like, it's a total thing that I think old men specifically do. They don't want people fussing about their health. I think it was as simple as
that. Yeah. Well, and this episode is this the one that ends with him in the bathroom, right? Coughing?
No. No, no, no. Stop. You're getting ahead. You're getting ahead. That's the next episode, Addison. This one ends with Monica falling.
That's the last scene. Okay, I'm so sorry.
I know. You didn't add any spoilers. So backing up to the governor's meeting, there's two women actually in this episode that are going to be very, very important characters and really shape the role of Jamie in the next 3 or 4 seasons. The first one is the woman we just talked about, his red-haired campaign manager, Christina. And it's clear from the get-go, they hit it off. Like, they're having great conversation. Mm-hmm. There's some laughter. She's offering to drive him home. The governor even, like, is bold enough to say, "Oh, no, it looks like you guys are going to hook up naturally, so we don't have to fake a romance. Like, this is going to happen. It's done and done." Spoiler alert, it kind of does, but we won't get there quite yet.
Well, that's one of those worry about it.
Yo, yeah. Christina is a big problem, even still to this day. Like, they haven't figured her out totally. She might end up becoming like the ultimate Yellowstone loose end, but she's going to be around for multiple seasons. The other woman we meet is the reporter named Sarah.
Yes.
Sarah was fishing with her wife, partner, girlfriend, and Sarah is definitely interested in this, what's going on with the Duttons and these murders that are being covered up and sort of these local political things, and can't keep her mind out of the news. Did you recognize Sarah, I don't remember the actress's name, from any other show?
No.
I bet you some people have. You remember the show Bones?
Yeah. Yes. Why I kind of wince is I actually have never seen it, but I seen the cover art for the series? Yes.
Sarah was Angela on Bones. She was like one of the primary three or four characters outside of the woman who played Tempest Brennan. Yeah, that's who that actor is. I knew I recognized her, and I actually watched a different show with her in it right around the time I was watching Yellowstone. That kind of faded, but and then I went back and I remembered, oh, she's Angela. Totally forgot about her. And that was a super cool character she had, but I like that actor quite a bit.
Is she someone we do need to worry about? Like, she's going to hang on for a little bit?
Yes. So,
okay.
To advance, tell you what she's going to do without telling you all the ways, she is going to be presented with some opportunities to really dig in with what's going on and what's happened on the Dutton Ranch. And
the ranch.
She learns a lot, and the end of her arc really shapes Jamie's role moving forward. It's very, very interesting.
Interesting. Okay. So I'll keep an eye out for her for sure.
Yeah. Two major characters that we met this episode.
Is there anything in this episode that you'd say was, I kind of feel like, I guess I haven't seen the seasons in between, but I feel like this episode, there wasn't a lot of don't worry about it, to my knowledge.
The only one I saw that I've kind of alluded to before is Tate's dinosaur makes a reappearance with that drone.
Oh, my gosh. Yes, yeah.
I don't know that that goes any further. If it does, it doesn't go much further. Like, the guy who is operating the drone gets away. That was kind of a puzzling scene, because it's not only, like, how did that guy know the dinosaur was there with his drone? Like, he must have known it was there to look there. But also, what did that do? Like, sometimes a don't worry about it actually sort of is important to set up a character or show you a different side of a character to set someone else up. That just seemed to be like a time waster a little bit. I guess what it did is it pulled Casey out of the house so then Monica could come down the steps and fall. But, you know, they could have found a better way,
a different way to
do that.
I assume that drone was just checked. I didn't realize it was specific for the dinosaur. I thought it was, you know, developer or whatever seeing what land was out there and then saw the people, yada, yada, yada.
It might have been, but they zoomed right in on that dinosaur. Like, I think if you were flying a drone around an area like that, you'd want to keep it away from people because you don't want what happened to happen. What's the man's name? T'Challa Black Elk is the actor. He shoots it out of the sky. Like, you don't want your drone to get shot out of the sky. So you keep it away from people.
Here's the thing.
He buzzed right in there.
I wonder if there's a legal, like, was that even legal?
I don't know. Okay. I have no clue.
That's a don't worry about it.
yeah. That's a down of a rabbit hole, but don't worry about it. One other plot line that I think we need to touch on is, did you understand the deal that Thomas Rainwater struck with Dan Jenkins?
Not entirely.
This is a pretty crafty move by Thomas Rainwater. He's looking to get land right up against the Yellowstone Reservation because the Yellowstone Ranch, because he wants to start moving in on John Dutton's property and realizes that the Paradise Valley land is right there. But his advisor tells him that land is worthless because it has no power. So he goes down there, and it just so happens that Dan Jenkins is having a meeting with a woman named Melody, who seems to be like almost like a Beth Dutton-like character for Dan Jenkins, just maybe a little nicer. Mm-hmm. You know who Melody's kind of like? Remember in season 5, Sarah Atwood?
Yeah.
Very Sarah Atwood-like. Like, that's her position, where she just finds ways to get things done. Very smart.
Yeah.
And Tom realizes that if Dan sells Thomas Rainwater the land to build a casino, he can get the loan he needs to not only build the casino, build all the infrastructure, the power, the water, and everything. And then from there, he can lease the land for the subdivision back to Dan Jenkins, and they can all make a ton of money, because presumably Dan Jenkins can make monies in other ways. So that's sort of the deal they put together. And Dan Jenkins knows Thomas Rainwater is an enemy of John Dutton's. That's why he says, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And they pretty much on the spot agree to form a deal. That will go forward. Like, Dan Jenkins and Thomas Rainwater will start building that casino. And that becomes a plot line for quite a few seasons, if I'm not mistaken.
Interesting.
So, I will say all that sometimes can be really hard for me to follow. Like I am tracking, but also, yeah.
This is kind of like the difference between like a cable or like a Netflix style show and like a network show. Like a Netflix style show will just sort of, it'll be like we just saw, like they'll say that information and it's up to you to either figure it out or rewind and rewatch it. Whereas a network show might like put some sort of like snappy graphic or dumb down the language so that someone who's watching kind of casually can totally understand what's going on.
Yeah, I
think I didn't totally get it the first time either. And there's a lot of stuff like that on Yellowstone. You're like, huh? What are they talking about? You're speaking too fast there, cowboy.
Yeah, you know. Can you have a little blurb? The little breakdown, please. Thank you.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I'm a big fan of the Dan Jenkins character. Because I think he's an interesting kind of villain. But has your opinion changed on Dan Jenkins, by the way, at all? It's only been another episode since okay.
No, right. I still don't like him. He's still squirmy.
Fair enough.
Squirrely is what I said.
Squirrely. Yeah.
Squirrely.
Hey, to you, that guy that John Dutton goes fishing with at the end, he's the same guy that he met up with at the rodeo that he told him have his son change. Doesn't that guy look like George Strait?
To be honest, no. Well, no, who I think he looks like, which you've never seen. So my brother's father-in-law, it is truly spitting image of him. I literally was like, oh my gosh, is that him? So no, I don't see George Strait. I see my brother's father-in-law.
Maybe
it is. I don't know.
First time I watched it, I'm like, George Strait's part of this show and no one talks about this? Like, to me, it looked just like him. A little bit older, maybe, than like how we see George Strait. But
I think you're just like, aka, you're stereotyping George Strait as like the classic like cowboy lives in a small town, you know, wears a button up and a hat and has a lot of money.
That's pretty much what George Strait is, isn't it? I mean, how is that different from who George Strait actually is?
No, that's what I'm saying. I was like, you just saw a man who like essentially represents that. I do not think they look alike. We'll take this one. We'll take this one to the listeners and viewers. Staff at tasteofcountry.com. Do you think that man looks like George Strait and are on the same wavelength as Billy? Or do you think that he doesn't? I don't think that he does. I think he just wears similar clothes and has a similar not mannerisms, but what George is. Demeanor a little bit. Yeah, George is more like level. I mean, Carl. I've never personally met George. This is all just like interviews I've watched, and it seems like, what was the man's name?
Carl.
Carl. It seems like Carl is like that.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. Anything else from the episode that you wanted to wax poetic on, or details you had questions or comments about?
No, my biggest one was just the realizing the Casey and Monica, like how they came to be. The only other thing is I didn't realize season four, when I entered, I didn't see the tension between Rip and Casey. And so I had no clue until this episode, episode six of season one, that there was tension there.
I kind of had forgotten about it as well, because they seem to have worked over their differences by some of the late seasons. But it is a fairly important plot point in season one, and it does get resolved in a pretty interesting kind of way. Like, this is like Yellowstone's writing at its best, season one and season two, when there was a lot of time and thought put into it. Like the scene you referred to between Beth Dutton and the governor, and like the Kip, the Rip and Casey scenes. Like, these are really sort of well thought out, well executed plot lines. And it's nice to see those again and treasure them.
Do you have anything else before I wrap us up?
Well, I wanted to talk about one thing. We don't have a Q&A this week, but I did want to go over just the schedule for Yellowstone on CBS real briefly, because it's been a little bit weird with some weeks having 2 week episodes, some weeks having one episode. So on Sunday night, we just finished watching episode 6. October 15th, we'll have episode 7 and 8. And then episode 9, which is the season 1 finale, is going to air on October 22nd. So we really only have 2 weeks left, right?
Y'all, we are flying through this year. Yeah.
Now, the question I have is, what's going to happen after that? Are they going to roll into season 2? Because while the writer's strike has resolved itself, the Screen Actor Guild strike still has not. So, and even if it had, CBS still needs programming to get it through the rest of fall. So I got to think season 2?
I think you're going to season 2.
I would love to get through all the way through season 2 because that resolves a lot of these plots. Like, it'd be really unsatisfying for someone to just watch season 1. In my opinion, season 2 is the best season anyway, although it's also the bloodiest.
Oh, Billy, why'd you tell me that? Okay. okay.
Have you been watching any other shows? Your show about teenagers in summer, or How I Turned Pretty? Has that been?
Well, yeah. No, Summer I Turned Pretty. We finished that a long time ago. Right. I am watching The Golden Bachelor, but that no one who's listening to this podcast is going to enjoy that. So I'm just not even. We're gonna move on. I've also been watching Dancing with the Stars. We're not gonna talk about that. What I have been watching, and actually I finished all of season 1, is Lioness.
Oh, that's a good show, isn't it? Oh, you didn't tell me this,
dude.
Addison.
I like it. I know. Well, because it didn't. I know. I've been holding back on you. I don't know why I didn't share. I think it more so didn't come up naturally in conversation. I like it. There's only been season 1, I think, or at least what I've been able to watch.
Yeah, just season
1. I'm here for it.
Yeah, it was really good. Like, some parts uncomfortable, but not so uncomfortable like Yellowstone in 1883. Like, it's a little bit more surface, I think.
It's different, yeah.
A type of violence maybe that we're just more comfortable with or accustomed to seeing on TV, I guess, which maybe sounds terrible.
Yeah, I was like, I also don't know how that sounds, but not incorrect.
And tell me, wasn't that right about the bride, Stephanie Meyer's character? What's her name, Aaliyah? The
bride?
Yeah, she's getting married. She's set to get married to... And that's why Yeah.
That she's attractive? Wasn't that your two cents?
Well, just that she's I wasn't going to make you comment on that. Just that she's really captivating. Like, it's like a super interesting character that I'd love to see come back for season 2 of Lioness and continue in that role. Still a big question mark there.
I don't know if she was a captivating character. I felt like she kept the plot going. I think who the captivating character was the gal who was sent there to... undercover.
Yeah.
I think she was more interesting than...
I agree.
I don't know. I think they're characters together. Yeah, I like it. Nicole Kidman, love her, but I don't think she serves like the biggest role. I'm kind of like, okay. Like, she's there.
I've been really floundering around with different shows. Like, I can't find a show that... I can just rip through a season on. Like, I've watched this show on Peacock called Poker Face.
Me. Okay.
It's decent. And then I've watched a little comedy called Killing It. Stars the guy from The Office, Craig Robinson, who played Daryl on The Office.
Okay.
Kind of. You know, it's not that great. And then, I'm trying to get through the end of Miss Maisel because I've watched the first 4 or 5 seasons of that. And it's like the final season. I got like 2 episodes left, but that's a slog. Like, I cannot find another show that I can just sort of take off on.
The one I like, it's very different than Lioness or Yellowstone. It's Only Murders in the Building with Steve Martin, Selena Gomez. Who plays in the – I cannot remember his name. In Father of the Bride, it's Steve Martin. And who is the wedding planner's name?
That was like 30 years ago. I don't have no memory of it.
You don't remember? That's one of my favorite movies, Billy.
It was good. I just don't remember his name. What network is it on?
Hulu.
I don't have Hulu. I have Hulu. I don't have Hulu, and I don't have Netflix currently.
I just got Hulu recently. Okay, let's see. Who's in this? The cast. Okay. Please hold. Martin Short.
Oh, yeah. I like him a lot. Well, and he's with Steve Martin, too. That's always good as well.
That's why I like it. Uh-huh.
Is it a murder mystery? It sounds like it must be a comedy, but is it like a murder mystery as well?
Murder mystery, comedy. I really enjoyed it.
You know what I may do if Spotify still has that deal where you can get Hulu for free? I may cancel my Apple Music because I haven't liked that as much. Sign up for Spotify Premium and then get Hulu.
Billy, you're an Apple Spotify. I mean, you're a Apple Music dude. Wow.
I haven't liked it as much as I thought I would.
You're an anomaly. My brother was also an Apple Music dude, and he slowly has transitioned over into Spotify.
Yeah, they're both fine, but both better than Amazon. Okay, we're getting off topic. You can go ahead and wrap it up. I'll enjoy some water while you think of an adjective.
Yes, I was about to give us the hook. I was like, and I think we're done. Well, as always, thank you all so much for listening. You can rate and review us on Spotify and Apple Podcast, as well as YouTube. We have recap videos every week, as well as this podcast. So head on over there. And as always, the Dutton Rules Yellowstone Podcast is another invigorating Townsquare Media podcast.
Invigorating. Splendid. Well done.
Thanks, y'all, for listening.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.